First John chapter 4, verse 18. John writes this: "There is no fear in love, but perfect love drives out fear." And sometimes I wonder if we believe that. I think we have a couple of challenges in front of us as Christians in the 21st century. One is we're some of the most distracted people who've ever walked the face of the earth. Two, we're some of the most exhausted people who've ever walked the face of the earth. Which God has had me questioning for 2 years. How is God going to speak a clear word into distracted, exhausted hearts who don't know how to stay still? And thirdly, we're some of the most fearful people who've ever lived. We have a lot of fears. And it's so hard to surrender those over to the Lord, right? But the good news is there's not a failure in our lives that cancels out our membership in God's family. There's not a failure in our lives that keeps us or that removes us from the covenant we have with God. Go back to Matthew chapter 14 for a few moments today. There's a story told in Matthew chapter 14 that's told in all four Gospels of Jesus feeding the 5,000 people. He has 5,000 men. Are there a lot more than that because women or children are there? We don't know an exact number, but there were a lot of people that Jesus fed. And you know this story. Jesus takes just a little bit of stuff and he ends up feeding the masses. But do you know what story is before or after Jesus feeding the 5,000? Right, the story before that, Jesus finds out John the Baptist has died. And if you read in Matthew 14, verse 13, and Mark and Luke tell the same story, Jesus is trying to get away from the crowd, to get away so he can grieve. He's trying to get away from people. Have you been in that place before where there's been some tragedy that has hit? There's been some grief that has hit you, whether it's death or an unexpected illness or something else? You just want space. You want to distance yourself from a crowd. And have you ever thought about it before that when Jesus feeds the 5,000 people, it comes out of this moment of deep grief. So he's lost a relative. He even gets in a boat to try to get away from the crowd, yet thousands of people find out where he is and they chase him down. So Jesus ends up performing a miracle that's told in all four Gospels from a place of grief. Some of the greatest work of God can come from your deepest forms of brokenness. Some of the greatest work of God can come from places of grief. Grief doesn't exempt you from being used by God for the restoration of God. So it's from a moment of grief that Jesus tries to remove himself from the crowd. The crowd finds him. Jesus has compassion on them. He feeds them. And then Jesus sends the disciples away so that he can do what he originally wanted to do, to get away to be with the Lord. Which, if you keep reading in Matthew 14, Jesus gets away and spends the entire night in prayer with God. And the story right after Jesus feeding the 5,000 is when Jesus, like mid-morning, right? It's still dark outside. He starts walking across the body of water. And he comes up to the boat. All right, and this is where you have that engagement with Peter, right? Where Peter says, if it's you, tell me to come to you. And Jesus says, come. And I'm sure in that moment, Peter was saying, I was just joking, man. Like, I didn't really think it was you, but now you said, come. So someone else want to go with me? And Jesus says, yeah, come on. Have you ever been struck before how much God loves working relationships? How much God wants active, working relationships with human beings. This goes all the way back to the very beginning. Right? Where even before the fall, God gives responsibility because when love is at its best, love delegates, love gives responsibility, love doesn't control. So in the very beginning, God invites humans into working relationships to take care of his stuff. And even after the fall, God gives the same responsibilities to humans again. It's going to be harder. But God hasn't quit trying to have working relationship with people. Have you ever seen the movie Armageddon? All right, if you've seen Armageddon, it's time for Bruce Willis to go up, right, to this meteor that's going to destroy the earth. And they're ready to send trained professionals with him. people who know how to fly, people who kind of know how to drill, but they're smart enough to learn, people who know how to blow up stuff. And what Bruce Willis's character says is, no, if I'm going to save the world, I'm taking my own team. And then you have like this 2-minute scene where it shows him rallying his crew. Where you got Bear, big African-American guy. And he says, what you need to do is just go to South Dakota, just look for the only black man riding a motorcycle. That's going to be him. Yeah, Bear was good at running from the law. They couldn't find him. And when they did, they're chasing him down. Then you got Rockhound, who spends all of his time in bars. And then you got another dude who spends almost all of his time in tattoo shops. And then you have, the other guy, Owen Wilson. I forget his character, but he's way out in West Texas. I think El Paso, where he's a rancher somewhere. And you have all these people coming from the weirdest places. Some of them were kind of educated. Some of them were not. And then you have people seeing them on the news, looking at the crew they're hoping can save the world. And we're left sometimes wondering, how in the world did God choose some of us to do what God has asked us to do? That God would find some guy who used to perform at Six Flags and on cruise ships. Hypothetically speaking, right? When did you graduate college? 70s? Wow. No, 80s. just joking, man. How God would use Josh Kaysinger and me. We have to pay people off to not tell some of the stories we used to do back in our youth group. And how God would take so many of you from where you have been. And God chooses us from all over, no matter where we've been, and raises us up and gives us responsibility and delegates authority, which is what Jesus does with the Great Commission. And even you get to Matthew 14, how many times have Peter already made a fool of himself? And Jesus keeps calling them, keeps giving them responsibility. And now they're out on this boat and Jesus tells Peter, hey, come to me. Peter starts walking. He sees the waves. He falls. Have you noticed before what it says? Jesus caught him. All right, sometimes what we think is, or even pictures that we've seen in maybe children's Bibles or something, is that Peter falls and he's sinking and then Jesus picks him up. It doesn't say Jesus picked him up. It says Jesus caught him. Does this give any of you comfort that in moments where you may be falling because you've lost sight, you've lost direction, a tragedy has hit, there is a God who catches us as we fall? And then all it says in the text is, when they got back to the boat. And maybe Jesus, he could do it. He could snap his fingers and they could immediately just be back in the boat. But you got to think what happens is he and Peter walk on the water together. And the winds don't stop until they get back in the water or back in the boat. You would think it would be cool if Jesus caught him, the wind ceased, they walked on still water to get back in the boat. But that's not what we have. Jesus catches him, they walk over the storm, they walk over the waves that are moving, and they get back into the boat. And I think there's something here about that serving a God, having Jesus who walks over any storm that may exist in our lives, and he carries us with him as he does. There's no storm Jesus can't conquer. And as you read the story, you see that they are fearful. It's a word that shows up a couple of times. You read through the Gospels, you read through the Bible, and how many times do you see an encounter with God that begins with fear and it ends with someone, an angel, the voice of God, it ends with Jesus saying, hey, don't be afraid. I've never counted them, but someone's told me before, it shows up about 365 times in Scripture. Do not be afraid. It's the command that shows up the most. One for every day of the year. I tell my boys this, because there are days where they share the same room. There are days where they get scared of the dark. I think they just want to stay up later. They talk about being fearful. You know, one of the last things we say when we say the prayers with them at night is, God teaches us, do not be afraid. So why is there so much fear in our lives? There's a phobia that is taking over a lot of churches. There's a difference between pet peeves and phobias, right? Pet peeves is just something that gets on your nerves. Like when people bite their fingernails or chew popcorn out loud or in movie theaters or answer their phones in movie theaters or chomp ice. I'm not against any of these things. I do think people who open their mouths and chomp ice loud, they may be in the pit of fire and destruction at the end, but no big deal, all right? It may be you. But phobias are different. Phobias are irrational fears. They do something to you from head to toe. It has an impact on you physically, mentally, psychologically. There are some funny phobias. You can go and just look at them. Like anthropophobia is a fear of company. It's a fear of having people over to your house. There's a fear of syngenesophobia, which is a fear of relatives. Some of you may have that, all right? One of the newest phobias is nomophobia, which is a fear of losing cell phone contact. This is that fear of when you're driving down the interstate or a road somewhere and it goes from 3 bars of 2 to 1 and you're like, oh my goodness. And then you're out of range for 20 minutes and you're like hyperventilating because an organ isn't working properly. And you can't, who knows what kind of text messages and phone calls you may lose. But there's another phobia. It's called a tiki phobia. And a tiki phobia is a fear of failure and a fear of letting people down. So when Stormont and I wrote a book that just recently about restoring all things, about the beauty of celebration. Have you read our book yet? Yeah, you did? Okay, good. Just make... There was the chapter on failure and the fear of failure. And it was one of the last chapters we wrote because we thought, man, if we are encouraging the church to be about the restoration of God and to celebrate well, we've got to have the chapter on how to deal with failure and fear. Because I think a tiki phobia is something that's creeping into the church where there's this fear of failure, this fear of letting people down. And think about the impact this has on younger people today who have so many expectations that are placed on them from teachers and parents and coaches. And what happens when you are overcome by a fear of failure or a fear of letting people down is it ultimately leads you to a place where you don't take any risks anymore. And you play it safe. And if there's one thing I don't want in my life, it's for God to visit me one day and say, Josh, why did you always play it safe with your life? If there's one thing I don't want God coming to the Sycamore View Church in Memphis one day and saying is, why did you guys always play it safe? Why didn't you ever take risks with your time, with your energy, your involvement in the community, with resources? And there are times we take these risks and they don't really pan out, but we learn how to trust God as we do it, right? And then John comes and says, perfect love drives out fear. I wonder how much John was shaped by watching the scene play out of Peter walking on water, falling, getting caught by Jesus, and then Jesus and Peter walking across those waves to get back in the boat. I wonder how much it shaped his life and his ministry and his leadership and the way he engaged the world. Because ultimately, this group of 12 who got it wrong so many times have become the people who decided that, look, if the resurrection is true, which we believe it is, man, we don't have anything to be afraid of. Right? We press into the world. We take risks. God is on our side. I was over in Arkansas at Harding recently. A few of us were meeting for an event we're doing this summer, and we went to chapel. I didn't plan on going to chapel. And there was a missionary who spoke. I don't know his name. He may be here. I've never met him before. But he was a guy who had spent some time down in South America. He said one day he was walking in the hallway in his church, and he noticed that someone came up and they were knocking on the door. And as he walked by the window, he saw this was a man who had sores from head to toe, was wearing clothes that were just like in shreds. And he had to repent because his first thought was, just don't make eye contact with him through the window. Just move on and ignore the fact that he's here because this could take a lot of his time. I was in a place about a month ago in my life where people were just getting on my nerves, and this doesn't happen much. And I felt God in a prayer time just say, you know what I want you to do? When you walk through the grocery store and you walk through other places, public places, I want you to put your cell phone in your pocket. I want you to look around in humanity and look at how beautiful and creative I am. And it taught me how to love people again. So his eyes met this guy, and then they struck up a conversation. He ends up feeding the guy a meal. This was a guy who had AIDS, had it for years. Sores from head to toe. They start eating meals together, which led to Bible studies, which led to discussing Jesus, which led to this man who had been told by many people that because of some of the things he had done, he could never be redeemed. For him coming to a place where he discovered the loving saving grace of Jesus. And one day he said, I want to be baptized. So the missionary said, well, let's go down to the ocean right now. And the guy responded by saying, look at me, man. I have sores from head to toe. I can't get in the water. And the missionary said, no problem. I got a friend who has a pool in his backyard. And the guy said, if I get in that pool, who's going to ever want to get in that pool after me? And then the man looked at the missionary and said, I know of a place. Back when I was a male prostitute, there was a motel where a lot of male prostitutes hang out. It's where we made a lot of money, and it's on the other side of town. And in one of those rooms is a double-sized bathtub. We can go there. And the missionary thought to himself, and he said, I don't know what this is going to do to my reputation if I go with a former male prostitute to a motel where male prostitutes hang out. But let me call up one of my missionary friends, and if he agrees to go with me, we'll go. So he called him up. They agreed, so now the three of them are going, and then it hits him. I don't know what's worse, me going with him or two missionaries going with the former male prostitute to this motel. And they get there. He's baptized into Christ. Then the missionaries meet the community that he lives in. He lived with these people who lived under a canopy of a building owned by the government. And one day this community came to him and said, can you transport our group? Can you put us in a van? Take us to the other side of town because there's a drug lord who just got put in prison. He's going to be there for decades and we're going to go take over his house. Right, we're going to break in and we're going to do something good with it. And this missionary is like, this stuff doesn't happen back in America, all right? People breaking homes, but not like this. The missionary called up some police officers who were his friends and said, hey, here's what these guys want to do. What do you think of this? And they're like, man, to get them under that canopy, to get them somewhere else, you go do it. We will not stop you. And now the missionary's really thinking, this stuff does not happen back in America, right? So they get in the vans. They go to this place, and these people, they break in the home, and they take it over. And then what for years had been a house run by a drug lord where drugs were sold became a house of rehabilitation and reconciliation. And tell me we don't serve a God who can restore, who can't restore hearts, relationships, and all communities, right? There's nothing God can't redeem and revive. And I wonder what would have happened if that missionary had ignored that moment where his eyes met. And how many days do I live where I am fearful to see people in the face because what's it going to lead me to do? What's God calling me to do with this? I got a friend, his name's Jeremy Courtney. Wrote a book, Preemptive Love. You can go check it out. Some really cool videos. Jeremy Courtney, back after the war, after the towers fell back in 2001, after the war began, he was part of a crew that went to Iraq to serve a lot of the poor and people who were just devastated. And one day he was hanging out in the coffee shop, and there was a man who came in with a four-year-old. And the man said, sir, you're an American, right? He said, I am. And this man said, I have a four-year-old who needs heart surgery. You're an American. Do something. Jeremy's not a doctor. Has no clue what heart surgery's about. Yet he couldn't get this four-year-old off of his mind, especially when he heard that there was a whole stack of papers full of young kids who needed just a minor heart surgery to save their lives because way back in the 80s and 90s when Saddam was unleashing biochemical bombs on communities. Something's in like the biological makeup now where there are a lot of children born with heart defects. And Jeremy couldn't sleep at night thinking about these kids. So he started making phone calls to doctors, one of them happens to live in Memphis now, who will go over to Iraq and they perform these heart surgeries on kids. Jeremy came to Sycamore View back in October and he preached alongside of me. And he was able to stand up in front of our church and declare that just that past week or the past couple of weeks, they had just performed their 1,000th surgery on Iraqi children. And in front of our church, I said, dude, I have a question I've got to ask you, man. I know you've probably been asked this before. But is it hard sometimes to perform surgery on a kid living in a place where you have no clue what they're going to grow up to become? They could grow up to be 20 years old and they know what that scar on their chest is from. And they know it was people who loved Jesus who did it. Or they could grow up to become people who were holding weapons, right? What do you do when a family somewhere around the community where you live who are terrorists have a kid who's in need of a heart surgery? What do you do? And his response was, Josh, when it comes down to it, we have discovered that the only way we can destroy our enemies is to destroy them with love. The only way we can win them over is to destroy them with love. These are kids who need God, and we're not going to be driven by fear. We went to lunch with he and his wife, and they have stories of bombs going off in neighboring cities, and they are pressing forward as God's resurrection, restoration, redemption continues to fall. Aren't these the kind of stories that keep you going no matter where you live? And we can go ahead and stand up. I'm going to sing one more song because here's what I love, man. When these people who were so fearful of Jesus walking on the water, when they get back in the boat, their response wasn't, Peter, tell us what it was like. Their response wasn't, Jesus, that's the coolest thing we've ever seen you do. All you get is they worshiped him. Isn't that an appropriate response? They worshiped. Let's stand, let's sing.
And heaven meets earth like an unforeseen kiss. My heart turns violently inside of my chest. I don't have time to maintain these regrets when I think about the way he loves us. Oh, how he loves us. Oh, how he loves us. Oh, how he loves. He loves us. Oh, how he loves us. Oh, how he loves us. Oh, how he it overwhelms and satisfies my soul. And I'll never, ever have to be afraid. This one thing remains. This one thing remains. Your love never fails. It never gives up. It never runs out on me. Your love never fails. It never gives up. It never runs out on me. Your love never fails. It never gives up. It never runs out on me. Your love. Your love. In death, in life, I'm confident and covered by the power of your great love. My debt is paid. There's nothing that can separate my heart from your great love. Your love never fails and never gives up. It never runs out on me. Your love never fails. It never gives up. It never runs out on me. Your love never fails. It never gives up. It never runs out on me. This one thing remains. This one thing remains. Blessed be the Lord who would not give us up. Blessed be the Lord for his unfailing love. The snare is broken and we have escaped. Our help is in the name of the Lord. Blessed be the Lord. Blessed be the Lord, who would not give us up. Blessed be the Lord, for his unfailing love. The snare is broken and we have escaped.
The snare is broken and we have escaped.
Our help is in the name of the Lord.
Our help is in the name of the Lord.
Our help is in the name of the Lord. Blessed be the
thankful that you guys were here this week. We want you to know that coming up, the first weekend in October is the Zoe Conference in Nashville, and the theme this year is Kingdom Come. And I'm telling you, it's going to be an awesome, awesome weekend. So come and join us. Any of these songs off the Loved CD are available on iTunes. We invite you to check those out there. Have a great rest of your week, and I pray for safe travels for you on the way home. Thank you.